Jake.
Yeah, man.
I'm really excited about this topic. I've been wanting to do this one for a long time as an enthusiast. I really appreciate your contribution to the forums where, you know, a lot of people think, oh, it's fear mongering. But as a purchaser of these cars, I wanted to know what kind of modes of failure that I'll be looking at just in case. So I, for one, prepare me more as someone that's going to go out and get these cars, but another as an owner to know exactly what to look for and if, you know, the signs and how to be on top of this kind of stuff. But the first one, just to let the audience know, the first one we're going to talk about is Intermix. And if you haven't heard of Intermix, if you've been on the forums anytime, you've heard of Intermix. But I've had some guys, some buddies of mine that experienced this thing. And it'll make the heart drop because you go, you pop your, you know, you back your engine bay, you do whatever. And all of a sudden you see something that looks dark in your coolant expansion tank. Yeah. And it looks like chocolate milk. And you just
there's more that leads to it than that. So let me explain to
tell us about that and what to look for and what's going on with this thing.
So Intermix was one of the first failures we saw here at Flat Six. It has been one of the more prominent ones, and for many years, you know, we were able to repair the engines because they were low mileage. They didn't have a lot of time on them. People didn't drive them to death, meaning they didn't really keep driving it with the Intermix. But now the cars are old, so very seldom are we able to repair one of these engines after it's had an Intermix failure. But what used to happen, a guy would call me up and he would say, you know, I have a 2009 96, just as an example, and we're going to talk about Y2K syndrome, right? But he would say, I've got a 2009 96. Before he said anything else, I would say, sir, let me take the words out of your mouth. And I'm sure somebody is going to listen to this broadcast or watch this in the future has been on the receiving end of one of these phone calls when I did this. And to date, I've been 100% right every time I've done this. I would stop the guy mid-sentence, not knowing why he's calling me. And I would say, let me explain to you what you were just about to tell me. And I say, you were driving down the road, and all of a sudden, you know, the car's running great, has no problems whatsoever. There's no smoke. There's nothing going on. And the little red light inside of your temperature gauge starts to blink, a slow, steady blink, about one time every second and a half. And the guy, you would hear him start to say, yeah, right. And I said, okay, well, you didn't really worry about it, but you looked in the user's manual of the owner's manual, and it said, hey, if that light's coming on, you've got low coolant. And the guy's like, yeah, that's what happened. I said, so you stopped the car, you let it cool down, you went to the back, and you found out, yeah, you did have low coolant, but you didn't really worry about it, right? Because you hadn't put any coolant in the car the entire time you had it. It's not like it was doing this all the time. And most of the time they would say no, that they weren't worried about it, but sometimes they would say, you know, it's always used a little bit of coolant. There was no big deal, right? It was like 50-50 that they would say it was no problem or that they had used some coolant over time. And the guys with the 2000s and 01s, the Y2K syndrome guys, as we're going to talk about later, they almost always never had any precursor to this, right? And I would usually do this with 2000 model year cars. So I would say you put coolant in it, you crank the car back up. It didn't do it anymore, right? And you drove the car for another couple of days or whatever, and it did it again. So you got a little bit more alarmed about it because it's not the first time that it happened. So this time you went back to the back, you took the coolant cap off, and you found a nasty milkshake inside the coolant reservoir. And every time the guy's like, oh my God, how did you do that? How did you just tell me everything that I was going to tell you verbatim? And I say, sir, it's because that's not the first time I've had this phone conversation. I've had this phone conversation hundreds of times, literally hundreds of times over the last 18 years of working with these engines. And there was a period there about 2008 up to about 2012 where this was the main thing bringing cars to us. I remember we had 7 cars here at one time, all having Intermix, and there was different things that brought them in with Intermix, but the majority of them did have a cracked cylinder head. which is what we're going to talk about. And it really fools people, because the people that say, oh, it's got a blown head gasket, we're going to talk about that. These engines do not blow head gaskets under any circumstance. I've seen one fail in all these years, and that one was induced by an owner that did not use a proper method of filling his coolant reservoir, even though I told him to. And we'll talk about that too. So I just wanted to kind of go jump in with a precursor to this and tell you guys, you know, what I've noticed with this and what I've seen. And anybody that's had Intermix understands this firsthand. It starts out as, you know, flashing light, you put coolant in it, no big deal. Then a day or two later, you go back to the back, you find that milkshake, and then you start Googling it, right? And then this stuff starts popping up that I've been posting for the last 17, 18 years. And the worst thing is, if you take it to a shop that doesn't passionately and explicitly understand these engines, you know, they can work on Porsches all day, but if they don't specialize in this engine and understand this engine, they're going to give you the wrong information. And they're going to try things like a head gasket and stuff like that, that is not going to be your underlying condition. And most of the time, they're going to replace like a heat exchanger or something, hoping that fixes it. And they're not going to pressure test that heat exchanger before they go spend $300 on one. Okay. And currently there's a global shortage of those heat exchangers, so it's not quite as easy to replace it as it used to be. And they've gone up a lot in price as well. So anyway, you can start asking me the questions that you had down now that I've kind of opened it up.
So, okay. You've just preambled it. Most people, like I say, they go back to the coolant expansion tank and they see the chocolate milkshake. So the big question is, after they calm down and the heart starts beating back to normal, what should this person do immediately? What should the person do? Obviously, as you said, they're going on Google. They're trying to find information. They're scared they're going to lose the engine. But what should they do at that moment?
There's basically three different ways you can have Intermix. Now, let's go ahead and define Intermix as the mixing of oil and coolant within the engine or within one of the systems like the cooling system. So you can have Intermix where you only get oil in the coolant. You can have Intermix where you only get coolant in the oil. You can have Intermix where you get coolant and oil in both systems. So that's the three ways you've got it. And there's different things that are impacted as collateral damage from each one of those three. So before we jump into what needs to be done next, let me talk about some of those things that can be collateral damages, because that kind of sets a stage for this. So let's say a guy has oil only in his coolant, and that one is probably the most common. That doesn't mean, okay, everybody wants to say, just because I say it's the most common, oh, well, this guy didn't say this about mine. It doesn't matter. There's no rhyme or reason to a lot of this. But what I'm about to share with you is what happens in most of the cases, not 100%. But let's say you end up with the oil in your coolant, okay? This usually is something that manifests from a cracked cylinder head, and it doesn't have the normal symptoms of a cracked cylinder head in another engine, because these cylinder heads crack on the backside, okay? They don't crack in the combustion chamber. So a lot of the smoke that normally comes from a tailpipe, when you got a cracked head, the coolant smell at the tailpipe, you don't have those things. The engine also continues to run fine because you do not have this coolant getting into the combustion chamber and fouling spark plugs and hydrolocking the engine, okay? There is some Intermix that will lead to that, but that's cracked cylinder failures. We're going to talk about that as one of the other modes of failure associated with Intermix failure. But right now, I want to talk just about cracked head specifically. So it's going to really kind of confuse your shop if they don't know this engine and its inherent traits, because what's going to end up happening is they're going to think blown head gasket or whatever. Okay, and they're going to probably give you the wrong advice because they don't use every day of their lives with this particular engine. They work on everything, and that's a problem. So if you have just coolant and oil mixed in the cooling system, the major problem with that, and the reason why you've got to have a sense of urgency, is because the cooling system was never designed to have any petroleum in it, okay? and specifically synthetic oil, which is a big deal with the things that are inside that oil, especially if it's been a while since you had an oil change and you have a lot of contaminants in that oil, because now the oil and the coolant have mixed in the cooling system. So this will, over a period of only a few days, in certain instances, or certainly weeks, and certainly anything beyond 3 months, will destroy every cooling system hose within the car. A 996 of that 2001 era, if it's just a normal 996, doesn't have a third radiator, I think that car has 29 cooling system hoses. I think a car with a third radiator has 31. We've seen a car that needed all 29 replaced, as well as both radiators, okay? Because the radiators have plastic tanks, the petroleum attacks them. So you've got to have a sense of urgency, and you cannot let this stuff sit in your cooling system, because the petroleum sitting in your cooling system is going to destroy every single part of the cooling system, whether or not you continue operating the car, okay? If you continue operating the car, it's just going to keep intermixing. You're going to put coolant in it. It's going to go mix with the oil. Oil is going to mix with the coolant. And with those cases, a lot of times you'll see your oil level drop down and the coolant level goes up. That's one of the weird things that happens with this, because the oil is getting into the coolant. Now, that's because of where the crack happens in the head. And we're going to talk about what happens when these heads crack and what leads to it later on. But basically, when the oil and the coolant mix in the cooling system, that is a worst case scenario for massive amounts of collateral damage. And the reason why is because the entire cooling system can be compromised in very short order. So those people, they have to have a sense of urgency. They've got to get that crap cleaned out of the system, and then they can't start the car back again. Because if you start the car back again, it's going to do the same crap all over again, and it's going to get right back in the system. So we see a lot of shops that they will think that the heat exchangers failed. Okay, their oil cooler has failed. That's another name for it. It's really a heat exchanger. It's made to heat the oil up as well as keep it cool. But a general go-to thing from somebody that doesn't know what they don't know with these engines is to go ahead and replace that, and they hope that they've replaced it and that's the fault. They're going to charge you $1,000, $1,500 to go in and replace this thing. And in 9 times out of 10, or probably 9.9 times out of 10, you're going to drive the car another couple of days, it's going to intermix again, because that wasn't the problem. So do not let your shop replace the heat exchanger. Make your shop buy a pressure testing tool from Stomsky Racing, okay? And furthermore, if your shop doesn't already have said tool, they have not worked on enough of these cars to be working on yours. Because if they work on enough of these cars to rate the business of working on yours, they would already have said tool, because they have not experienced this for their first or second or third time, if you see what I'm saying. So if they don't have that tool, that screams red flag, I don't want to use this shop, okay? But make sure if you do use that shop, if the car's already there and you're stuck there, StompskyRacing.com sells a pressure tester. And it will pressure test that unit. All it needs is compressed air from a shop air compressor to pressure test that heat exchanger. If it pressure tests good, that is not your problem. If it pressure tests bad, you can probably go ahead and have the whole system cleaned out, purge everything out of it. And I want to talk in the end about how to clean up intermix, because there's a couple of silver bullets that I can share about what we do to clean it up. It's not real easy to clean up, and it's very hazardous material, by the way. Because your local oil recyclers won't take it from you, because it's got potassium and all kinds of things mixed in it with glycol and everything else from the antifreeze. But those are some major points that I just wanted to bring up now about the sense of urgency. And if you've got this intermix of oil only in the coolant. So now let's go over if you only have coolant in your oil. That can also be a cracked cylinder head. It can also be a cracked cylinder. It can also be a heat exchanger and some of these other things as well. This one does not happen nearly as often because it takes a crack in a certain part of the head to make this occur, or it takes a crack in a certain time of engine startup for this to occur. So if you end up with coolant in your oil, that's a lot more noticeable. Usually the engine will have some symptoms. Usually it'll smoke or something because you've dumped a lot of water into the oil. That one is almost an instant death to these cars. You end up with a situation where if the engine has that occur, a lot of times, you know, it's going to take out the connecting rod bearings. It's going to take out the main bearings. It's going to take out a lot of stuff before you can address it. And that's always a killer. Also, if somebody's had an IMS retrofit done with anything other than the IMS solution being a plain bearing, and you've had coolant get in your oil, you must replace that IMS bearing. I don't care if it's one day old, because 0.1% of coolant intrusion in the oil increases ball bearing wear by 40%. So we've seen people that would do an IMS retrofit with a regular standard bearing, that was an open bearing, not even using the LN engineering stuff, using the cylindrical bearings or whatever. They end up with coolant in their oil. They fix it. Shortly thereafter, that IMS bearing fails. That was collateral damage from the cylinder head failure or whatever was leading to the intermix. So I want to talk about the more rare or the most rare of the three different kinds of intermixing that occurs. And that is where you get oil intermixed evenly with the coolant and coolant intermixed evenly with the oil. So you're going to have it both ways. Your oil is going to be contaminated and your coolant is going to be contaminated, and you got it both directions. Now, what usually happens with that one, and what can happen with any of these, is when the failure happens. Because let's say this failure happens when the car is hot and at idle, okay, in the summertime. And it's not always heat related. A 2000 model year car can have this happen with no instigator. There doesn't have to be any rhyme or reason for it other than just your bad luck, okay? And you're in traffic. And all of a sudden, you have this crack emerge or some instance occurs in the cylinder head that allows you to have intermix. Well, in that situation, your cooling system pressure is really high, probably 15, 18 pounds, maybe higher than that, if the coolant is really hot and it's a really hot day. But if it's a really hot day, your oil temperatures are also really high, and that means your oil pressure is low, because thin oil means lower pressure. So if you have this happen, the chances of a guy having a situation where his coolant is mixed in with his oil is much greater during this scenario than if the roles were reversed and it happened when the engine was cold. And the reason why is because whichever one of those two pressures in the cooling system or the oil system is the highest is going to determine who's going to win the battle and who's going to bleed out, okay? So this happens with the engine hot and your cooling system pressure is high. The cooling system pressure overcomes the oil system pressure and it pushes the hot pressurized coolant into the oil, okay? If you have this occur when the engine is colder, when you don't have any cooling system pressure, really, so to speak, the thermostat isn't opened all the way or even starting to open yet, and the oil is colder and thicker and under more pressure, then the oil would win that battle and it would put oil in your coolant. You see what I'm saying? But in some of these cases where it goes both ways, it's because this void opened up somewhere in the engine and it was big enough for both things to just... And then you have it both ways, okay? So that's why there's no rhyme or reason about if you've got it oil in the coolant or coolant in the oil or both of them, if that makes any sense to you. Basically, it happens whichever one of those different systems has the highest pressure in it when this void occurs inside the cylinder head or whatever fails, then that is the commodity that's going to win that battle, and it's going to force the coolant or oil to be contaminated. Do you follow that?
I do. And before we start talking about how do we remedy the situation until the car is actually repaired, I'd like to talk about which cars are most affected by this problem.
Okay. So pretty much, and you can have intermix with any M96 or M9X engine, as we call them, from 97 up to 2008. it can happen to any of them. So I would like to break it down into basically three groups. I would like to break it down into your 97 to 99 cars. Then I would like to break it down into your 2000 and 01, 996, which will also encompass the 2002 Boxster. And the reason why is because that generation of car was the five-chain engine, okay? The Boxster kept a five-chain engine 1 year longer than the 996. And this problem follows into the 2002 model year with those cars because of that. And then beyond that, I want to talk about this failure with everything beyond those two models. So you talk about 03 and up Boxster and Cayman, and you would talk about 02 and up 911 models, okay, which would also encompass 997. So basically, first off, the earlier the car, the more we see this not apply. The earlier the car, the better these engines are able to avoid intermix. I don't think I've ever seen a 97 Boxster with it. I don't think I've ever seen a 98 Boxster with it. I've seen a couple of 99 Boxsters with it, but it's because those engines had a scenario where they were built at a certain time after the Coleman Schmidt factory burned down, and it would have a slip sleeve. The cylinder sleeve would slip back, and it would let coolant in, and you have all this problem go on. So that's a slip sleeve failure. We'll cover that a little bit later on. Those cars have all been off. Those engines have been failed for years and years. We haven't seen a slip sleeve in probably 5 or 6 years because those cars just don't exist anymore. They've all failed already that were a focus of that. So if you want to avoid this failure, and if you want to avoid a lot of the other failures, you buy the earliest car you can find. Now, I will say I've seen a 97 Boxster, which has a one-year only heat exchanger, had the heat exchanger fail, and it resulted in intermix. You can't buy that heat exchanger anymore. And several things about that engine are weird that require you to have that heat exchanger. Okay, that's just something to understand. So I like early cars. There's no doubt about that. Everybody knows that, because we just don't see these failures from them. So if I had to say 97 to 99, early 99, being a car built in 98 and was imported and sold in 99, those are the ones we see the least amount of problem from. Now I want to talk about Y2K syndrome, okay? So while everybody was wondering if their computers were going to crash when we turned to stroke of midnight in 2000, right? there was a problem looming with these cars that nobody knew about. And that's what I've deemed Y2K syndrome for many, many years. And Y2K syndrome, it affects mostly 2000s, but it also affects the 2001 model year because a lot of those engines were built in 2000. And those remain a five-chain engine, okay? And Porsche had a couple of things happen during that period of time. The cylinder head casting slightly changed. They also ended up with a scenario where they were milling a deeper trough to get more oil flow into the variable valve timing arrangement portion of the cylinder head. And milling that area actually weakens that part of the head. And Bobby, I'll give you a couple of pictures of this so you can throw them in here when you kind of edit this together, okay? But I'll show you that the earlier heads were as cast, meaning they did not have any machine work done or milling work done to make those areas deeper, where the 2001 model year cars did open that area up. And that, to me, seems like a problem that leads to some of this because it weakens that area of the head and it makes it easier to have this crack form. And I want to talk about the crack forming as well, because that's one of the weird things that will help people understand why the car behaves like it does when it has this problem. And let's talk now, you know, as we finish talking about the Y2K cars, 2000 being the worst, 01 being the second worst, and extending into 02 with a Boxster. And at this point in time, guys, I'm classifying Boxster and 911 together. I'm sorry, but they use the same cylinder heads. If you've got a Boxster S, that's the same cylinder head casting as a 3.4 liter 996. It just does. If you look at a Boxster engine, it has a 996 part number on the head. It's the same head. They even use the same camshafts. And that's why it costs the same amount of money to build both those engines, because they're basically the same. The 3.2 and the 3.4, other than bore size, 93 versus 96 millimeter, there's hardly any deviation in these engines. That's the guy, if he calls me up, says, I got this 2011. I'm like, dude, this, you know, I want to take the words out of your mouth. It's that guy, right? But I call it Y2K syndrome because of the generation of cars that it affects. And those are affected more than anything else. 97 to 08 is that kind of middle ground, 01 up to 02 Boxster, and 2000 up to, sorry, I lost my train of thought. 2000 up to 01 in the 996, and 2000 up to 02 in the 986 in the Boxster. Now, I want to exclude from this the 2.7 liter engines, because the guys that have a standard base model Boxster, very seldom have we ever seen this problem happen. In recent history, I can't think about it happening. Those 2.7 engines are bomb-proof in most cases. Replace the IMS bearing and they go forever. They don't score bores. They don't have problems. We'll have another Rencast all about that M96-22 engine. And all of its inherent traits, and most of them are good. It just sucks that that engine is in the base model and it doesn't make a lot of power, even though we can make it powerful. And then now let's talk about everything newer than that 01996 and everything newer than that 02986. And this will also include 997. It'll include Cayman. It'll include the late Boxsters. It'll include all of those, except for your GT3 and turbo variants, because none of this is applicable to any of those cars. They don't have these problems, okay? So with those cars, most of the time, if you have intermix, you probably do have a questionable heat exchanger, because that is one of the more common things that can make those engines have, intermix. The biggest thing, especially if you have a 3.6, 996, or 997, or a 3.8, 996, or 997, is a cracked cylinder wall, because that cracked cylinder wall will give you the same symptoms as a cracked cylinder head. A lot of times, it'll give you a little bit of other symptom as well. You'll end up with a puddle of coolant dripping out of one of your tailpipes, or out of one of your headers, or out of one of your mufflers, okay? The engine will seize up, because you're going to hydro lock it. You're going to put so much coolant in the cylinder that it can't be compressed, and you're going to have a scenario where it locks the engine up. Okay. Sometimes it'll run, but it'll smoke and it'll blow coolant at the tailpipe. So those are usually your cracked cylinder problems. These engines of this era that I'm talking about now don't really crack cylinder heads and create intermix, because the cracks that we see form in these heads form in the secondary air injection portholes. And those will basically make the cylinder head leak coolant at the exhaust flange, because those three holes there that pass through, where secondary air is pumped through the cylinder head into the exhaust system for emissions. And these heads crack very deeply within inside themselves. And that crack makes the coolant dump into the exhaust. So that crack can basically look like a cracked cylinder. In those cases, pull the exhaust manifold off at the cylinder head. If you've got coolant dripping out of one cylinder's exhaust port, you know that's one that has a cracked cylinder. If it's leaking out of those three holes that are about the size of your pinky inside the cylinder head, that head can never be repaired. And that cylinder head needs to be thrown away, because you can't get deep enough in it to weld it up. Okay, we'll talk about how to repair these things later on. But these are the things that if they strike a later model engine, are usually what we see come to fruition. But they are few and far between. They don't really happen. I'll get maybe 3 or 4 cracked cylinder calls a year. I might get one cracked cylinder head call from a 997 guy that's got coolant leaking out of those exhaust secondary air ports once a year, as a general rule. So while they do happen, it doesn't happen very much. So if you want to avoid intermix, you avoid buying a car of that Y2K generation, even though that's some of the better cars from certain aspects of things. From an intermix perspective, they're bad. A 2000 model year car, I wouldn't trust it. I can't tell you how many of those cars I've been able to buy and own over the years. And I'll tell you a scenario about one. And I also want to tell you a scenario about when we get to the point of repairing these engines, about why we don't really repair cracked cylinder heads anymore. So I bought a 2000 Millennium Edition. It's one of the most rare 996s of all. I bought it with Intermix. I bought the car in 2007. It had maybe 40,000 miles on it. My wife drove it back and forth to her office every day after I repaired the cracked cylinder head. And honestly, I just threw another head on the thing. It only had oil get in the coolant. So it was easy enough to clean all the crap out of it and replace a cylinder head and send it on its merry way. But she drove that car for a while, and then it cracked a cylinder head on the other side. So I pulled it down, and I replaced that one as well. So that's the same car cracked two heads, okay? That tells you what how big of a problem this is with those cars. Now, the reason I brought this up is because this was very early in my research for these engines at the point of Intermix, from an Intermix perspective. We were busy fighting IMS bearing developments and all that sort of thing more than anything during this generation at flat six. But basically, that is when we learned that you can have a failed water pump as an underlying primary condition that leads to a intermix condition. So let me expand on that a little bit. So let's say you've got a failed water pump, and usually how the water pumps fail is the bearings go bad, okay? And when the bearing goes bad, it makes the water pump impeller lose control. And basically those plastic impeller blades contact the water pump housing and or contact the block where the water pump goes in, and it breaks off pieces of plastic. Usually you don't know this has happened, okay? The water pump bearing has to be pretty damn bad for you to hear it, okay? But you'll have a scenario where that happens, and as soon as those pieces of plastic come off, they are immediately sent into the engine, okay? Because you've got a high flow, high volume and pressure of coolant going through the engine. These bits of plastic are small and they float around very easily. They go out into the engine, okay? You take it to your local shop because now you've saw a puddle of coolant on the ground, okay? The local shop doesn't know what they don't know. They haven't attended my classes. They haven't made these mistakes firsthand. And they just change the water pump. They think nothing about the fact that that plastic impeller is missing in the engine, the one that contacted the block and got broken. It's inside the engine somewhere. But they haphazardly go in. They just replace the pump, throw the old one in the scrap. They put the new one in and send you on your way. Couple, 3 months, 6 months, 2 years down the road, you end up with a cracked cylinder head. You send me the car. I pull the cylinder head off. My cylinder head technician mills into said crack and finds a plastic impeller blade from your water pump that failed 2 years ago, deeply lodged within the cylinder head. At that point in time, your primary mode of failure was that you had a water pump failure. Secondary mode of failure was that water pump impeller got deep in the head and it has blocked or constricted the flow of coolant around one little isolated square inch of real estate within that cylinder head because it's been lodged there, and it makes that stay hot for a while. Your coolant temperature gauge never shows you this. You don't know what's going on because overall your coolant is running fine. This one little area of the cylinder head is not getting coolant flow. It's like a little stroke inside the engine, if you will. So then you have that scenario where that one little piece of real estate gets hotter and hotter, then it finally forms a crack. When that crack in the cylinder head goes between the coolant and the oil passages that are basically two different levels between each other, when a crack forms between them and bridges that, that is when you have intermix. So that's what happened to that 2000 Millennium Edition that I had. It had had a failed water pump. Somebody replaced it before the first head cracked. I get the car. I had not put this puzzle together back in 2007, okay? I replaced one cylinder head. We go on about our business. We saw it had a new water pump on it. No big deal. Then the other side cracks. Able to pull it out with a pair of tweezers and conclusively prove that that impeller caused that crack. Okay? That's why I tell people, change your freaking water pump every 3 years, whether you think it needs it or not. Okay? And always use a genuine Porsche water pump. Don't just use the OEM Pureberg. We only use the genuine because I have noticed a difference in the quality of them, especially the run out of the pulleys and things like that. That keeps the bearing alive longer.
Some people, let me just say, add something right there. A lot of people would think that replacing a water pump with a metal impeller would be a smart idea because metal's stronger than plastic.
There
is some theory that over time, plastic inside a coolant system will deteriorate from the heat and the chemicals by itself without the bearings. So eventually, I mean, I remember hearing stories of the bearing being fine, but the just the heat and the coolant over time and age, those things would just break off. Why wouldn't somebody want to do a metal one? I guess that's the question.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because if you have a metal water pump impeller and the bearing goes bad on that water pump, and it happens all the time, guess what happens to your metal impeller? What does that metal impeller become?
Like a grinder, I guess. I don't know.
It becomes a milling machine. It's a milling machine.
So
then it
gets metal loose, I guess.
Well, you need a new crankcase. You need a new block because it chews into the block and it takes away the critical clearances inside the block between the block and the water pump. So we throw blocks away all the time. And actually now we came up with a way to rejuvenate them with a stainless steel sleeve that we've CNC'd to go in and fix this, but we're only doing it because some certain blocks we can't get anymore. So it costs a lot of money to go in and fix it, but don't ever, ever use a metal impeller water pump. And those are usually low quality bearings they use. They're Chinese and Indian and Romanian made bearings in those water pumps, and they don't last very long at all. That's not a fix. People they want to outsmart the problem. Well, I'll make sure this don't ever happen again. Well, buddy, guess what you just did? You guaranteed that when you do have a problem, and you will, that you're going to need a whole new crankcase, and you just thought yourself to death.
Well, I guess the smart thing to do is don't try to talk yourself out of doing it, replacing it preventatively.
The smart thing to do is to do the proper kind of research and talk to the proper people and listen to things like what we're giving you right now, which is all firsthand information. Yeah. Because a guy trying to sell you a metal impeller water pump, he isn't going to tell you this.
I'm thinking about even one that has an OEM pump. Hey, you know, these cars are 20 years old now. And you go on there, and you tell me if I'm wrong about this. When it comes from the factory, you can tell by the printing of the serial number. A lot of times they'll have the Porsche logo printed from the factory. The replacement OEMs won't have that. So that's one way to know. Tell me if I'm wrong here, if the pump is actually the original pump that was meant on there. So obviously that would be say, hey, I'm 20 years old. I need to go ahead and get this thing replaced. But they don't even know. Yeah.
Well, man, I tell you, if the car's 20 years old, it should have had four water pumps by now, at least four water pumps. Okay. So if you look at your water pump and it looks like the corrosion on the casing of it matches the corrosion on the casing of the engine, that probably is a original one. They do have date stamps on them, okay, and they also have revised part numbers on at least the later ones, okay. But if you don't know, you need to replace the damn thing. I mean, that's the smart way to go.
Yeah, I know. It always fascinates me the mindset of a lot of these owners that a lot of people it's like they look at stuff like this. It's like a bulb burning out. No big deal, right? A bulb burns out, replace it. But this is not a bulb. You can't just wait until this thing burns out because it takes so much out.
Well, I get that question all the time. I get people that send us a submission ticket on flat6innovations.com. And they say, I'm kind of trying to weigh out my options. Should I do this as an elective build or should I wait for it to blow up? And I'm like, you're a dumbass. If you want to wait until this engine fails, if you knew what I know, that is dumb because it is going to cost you at least 1 year without your car. We at minimum have a 1 year backlog. Right now we are booking, it's currently the third day of January 2021, and we are booking for July of 2022. We are over 18 months out right now. Okay. So if you want us to be able to repair or, you know, electively build an engine for you, a year to an 18 month backlog is the norm. So if you let the engine go ahead and fail, you'll be without the car for over a year. Okay. If you do it electively, you can continue driving the car and you're without it for 3 months or so. Okay. But letting it pop and letting it fail makes zero sense to a guy like me because I know what happens, and what happens is collateral damage. It's never, the collateral damage is what costs you the most amount of money. So that water pump, yeah, it's a $400 water pump or whatever the case may be. I don't know what they cost. We don't sell any of that stuff here. We only build engines and we include all that stuff with an engine.
And that's a really very doable project for people. And this is not like you have to have a specialty shop to change out a water pump.
No.
It's something a do-it-yourselfer could do, I think.
They can, and we could do a video about that. But, you know, the one thing that people don't have a lot of times at home is an airlift. And I believe airlift is required to properly fill these cooling systems. The one head gasket I've seen fail was a Renlist member. And he did not use an airlift. He thought he could get away with it because he read a article on Pelican Parts that told him he could do it without it. And yeah, you can do it without it. Is there a risk that you could have an air pocket in that engine? Go ask him. It cost him $20,000. Okay.
Oh yeah.
A tech article cost him $20,000. Go talk to him about it. He won't admit it to you.
I've seen so many videos where guys would just keep filling it and they use a little bleeder. Drive it around a little bit, bleed it, drive it around,
With this engine, the cooling system's too big. You'll never get all the air pockets out of it. That's the problem. So using an airlift, a vacuum filling tool, actually fills the system under vacuum, and it also pressure tests it to make sure you don't have any leaks before you fill it, because otherwise you just end up losing coolant. It's $100 for one of those systems, and you have to have an air compressor to make it work. But that is the proper way to do it. If somebody installs one of my engines, I require them to use an airlift. You would be surprised how many shops don't have an airlift system and they don't do this job properly. Just like they don't have those pressure testing systems for the heat exchanger. You know, it's an $80 tool. You know, they need to have this stuff if they're doing this work. But yeah, so water pumps can be probably the biggest underlying condition that can lead to this, that is something that can electively be replaced. Anything else is just luck, you know, making sure that you don't drive the car if the belt breaks, you know, making sure that you, you know how the engine runs temperature-wise, you know, making sure the thermostat doesn't stick and things like that. But I would have to tell you that overheating is not the primary problem or concern with these failures that lead to intermix.
And I was going to jump in and ask you.
They never got hot. These cars that had this happen either had a water pump fail and the impeller blade was a problem and was an instigator, and or it was an inherent flaw within the cylinder head that just failed. And it was just luck of the draw. And with a 2000, the odds are stacked against you.
Are the northern cars more susceptible to intermix versus southern cars?
I get them everywhere. We get that. It's not like some failures like bore scoring, which we've even busted that myth here lately. It doesn't matter. It's not prejudice. It can happen anywhere and everywhere. I would have to say that probably the effects of it are worse with a southern car, because the chances of somebody driving it with an intermix and really hot temperatures and creating overheating condition from that are greater. Because when you get that nasty milkshake in the cooling system, the water pump won't move it. So you can bake the engine because of the intermix, you see. The intermix is not caused by it getting hot, but the intermix will cause it to get hot because it can't move it through the cooling system.
Okay, so I'm waiting to the, I've been waiting for the, for this. What is your remedy for the do-it-yourself or that just found out, got the milkshake? What is the special sauce? What do they need to do to cleanse this thing, to buy time until they can figure out how to get the engine repaired?
Well, the first thing is you got to get that cooling system flushed. You have to get that done now. I'm talking, you can't wait 2 or 3 days. Especially, you know, if you've got the coolant system that's been filled up by the you know, the nasty milkshake inside the cooling system hoses and radiators, you got to get that stuff flushed out. Now that can't be, that can be kind of a pain. We actually made a hot water flushing device. I use an old water heater and I put a big pump on it and a 55 gallon drum, actually two 55 gallon drums. And we take pressurized water in one 55 gallon drum. We put Shout laundry detergent in it. Okay. This is a black art, right? Shout laundry detergent doesn't make any suds. You put the Shout inside a 55 gallon drum with the hottest water you can get. We then run that through a water heater to get it even hotter. And then we pressurize that through one side of the cooling system and we back flush it all the way through the car. And we bring it out the other side of the cooling system and we dump it into another 55 gallon drum. And that creates 55 gallons of hazardous material that we have to have Safety Clean come haul off. Okay. But that is the only way to get all that stuff out of there to a point where you're not going to have a problem and do it quickly. Otherwise, you're going to have to use water hoses and all kinds of stuff and maybe get some Shout in the system. But you've got to be able to pressurize and get all that crap out of there. There are professional made flushing devices that shops have that are made to do this, but they don't work that well compared to the thing that we rigged up to do it with, just because of the amount of volume that it takes to get all this. Basically, all 30 of those hoses you got in the engine or in the system have to get flushed. And it's important when you do that, that you turn the key on and you turn your heater on high and open up the heater core, because the heater core also gets filled full of this crap. So not too long after somebody has Intermix, a lot of times their heater core will fail. And then they end with a puddle of coolant inside the floorboard of the car. Well, their heater core's failed. That's up inside the dash area. Because it's plastic and it gets impacted by that petroleum as well. But from a perspective of repair, okay, so let us go over now, if you've got this, what can be the causes of it, okay? We know what the symptoms are already, and I've told you what usually causes the cracked head, but there are four other things that can lead to intermix beyond a cracked head. And this is what you have to determine, okay? So one is the heat exchanger. That's the oil cooler on top of the engine. Like I said, that one is susceptible to failure, and they corrode, they cause problems. But usually if a car comes to us, it's got an intermix failure, somebody's replaced that, and it didn't solve the problem. They just spent good money for no reason, right? So the shop should have pulled their old one off. They should have pressure tested it and seen if that was a problem before they just went ahead and threw one at it and charged the customer money. The other thing is, if the car is a Tiptronic and only a Tiptronic, it has another one of those heat exchangers that's the same part number located on the automatic transmission. Okay? Under your Cayman, you'll see one. That one can fail too, because it keeps the transmission fluid cool. Okay. So a Tiptronic car, any Tiptronic car, has that on the side of the gearbox. That one can fail and it can get things, it can contaminate any number of things, because you can put transmission fluid in the coolant. Okay. And it'll still intermix. Sometimes you'll catch it because it looks kind of red a lot of times, right? But it's according to what gearbox fluid is in the Tiptronic. If somebody's put Motul in it, it won't be red anymore, right? And some of the Porsche fluid also, they've changed that stuff over time. The early cars, it was more of a red tint. So anyway, if you have a Tiptronic, you got to check that second heat exchanger. Third one is, if the car is a 996, or even some of the base model 997s, or any of the 996, 997s, 911 variants that have a water line attached to the air oil separator. Okay. The Boxster and Cayman never had this, but the 911 variants did have an air oil separator that had coolant pass through it. There's a lot of different theories out there about why the factory did it from a temperature perspective and freezing perspective and this and that. But that air oil separator diaphragm can fail, and that can also cause intermix. Okay. Those are your most common things that are going to cause it. Yes, you may be the guy that ends up with a real bad lottery ticket and wins the blown head gasket, but you will be the second guy I've ever talked to conclusively in my life that's had that happen over all these years. It just doesn't happen. If your shop is telling you you got a blown head gasket, the first thing you got to do is take the freaking car away from that shop.
Well,
they don't know these cars.
We sit here and talk about, you know, you and I have talked about the head gaskets not blowing because of the way they're designed. But it's surprising to me how many people take their cars to shops and that's the first thing they say.
Well, because other cars, the reason why they're treating this like something it's not, they're treating it like another engine, and they cannot do that. This is where their experience with other cars causes a problem, okay? This is where a general practitioner is schooled by the specialist, okay? And like with us being specialists, it's what we do. And I see these general practitioner shops creating unnecessary and undue amounts of work for themselves because they don't know what they don't know. They haven't attended my classes. If they would have come to my class, they know automatically, hey, boom, I don't assume this thing has a blown head gasket. Now let's talk about the reason why the head gaskets don't fail. These engines use a multi-layer steel head gasket. Okay. Not like an old car. Okay. That used some other composition of cylinder head gasket. This is a steel head gasket and it's multi-layered. These head gaskets are stronger than the block and the cylinder heads on your M96 engine. They are the last thing that will fail. You will crack a cylinder or you will crack a head both before this gasket fails.
That's crazy. Okay? When you think about it.
Okay, so it's the strongest part, but this is the thing. Failures will go to the weakest link first. If the weakest link ends up being that, then it's going to fail first. Now, I will kind of have a little bit of a precursor to throw in here, too, before we go into something else. We've seen head gaskets fail, but they fail where the coolant leaks externally, and I've got a couple of pictures of those that I can send to you as well, Bobby. Where the head gasket ends up basically, I might actually even have one that I can get to here real easy. Give me a second. Let me look for something. I think I might have one standing by for me because I had it a little bit earlier on a forum trying to show it to a guy.
Well, while you're doing that, I'll just share with the audience a common mistake that owners will do is that, like you say, they have the coolant light blinking and then they go and they pop the deck lid and they look at their coolant expansion tank and they have the chocolate intermix and they freak out and then they shoot themselves in the other foot by just letting the car sit in the garage for a long time till they can figure out what they want to do with the car. My question would be, waiting, as you've told us tonight, kills all those coolant pipes. What amount of money does that add to the bill? So what is the penalty for waiting?
$4,000.
Just for the parts.
Yeah. Well, that's the parts and the labor. It's a bitch of a job. We won't even do it anymore. I mean, if somebody has that happen, we're like, hey, you know, if you can take your fingers and this is how you check it. I've seen these hoses get so bad and they get so destroyed from the inside out. They'll look fine on the outside.
Oh yeah.
I've taken my fingers.
You just punch
from. Just peel the hose apart. Just take your fingers and just peel it apart.
It's amazing what that concoction will do to rubber. You think rubber should hold up as long as it doesn't dry rot in your mind, from an enthusiast standpoint. But when you think about that concoction of the coolant, the chemicals in the coolant mixed with the petroleum product and the oil, it is. I've seen some images, and it's just kind of like it almost like it thins it out. and you have a thick coulee pie, and it's almost like you could just push your finger through it.
All right, so that picture, that is where a cylinder head is meeting the block, okay? And that pink stuff you see there, that is the coolant, okay? So if you're looking at that picture, and you see there's a line kind of going diagonal across the picture there from the top left down toward the middle at the bottom, that is where the cylinder head is meeting the block, and that head gasket is leaking externally, okay? So that one was leaking externally. This happens a lot on Cayman S's. You know, Cayman S's will have that happen a lot of times. For whatever reason, M9721 engines, M9722, which is, another variant of that, also will have that occur. And a lot of times they'll do that for years. I mean, I've got a guy that's been driving one like that for like 4 years. And that is a cylinder head gasket failure, but that one, it's just making it lose coolant. It's not going to do anything else. I mean, he can put coolant in it and drive it for a month or two and put coolant in it, drive it again for a month or two, and there's no problems with that. Can head gaskets leak? Yes, we see that, but they leak externally, not internally.
So I guess the best advice is don't ignore it. Admit you have this issue. Jump on the problem. Find a good solution.
It's just like anything else. Any of these failures, and we're going to bring this up every time we talk about a failure mode, you've got those three things that go into it, right? You've got the whole thing where you just don't want to believe that it happened, right? It's the denial phase. Is this happening to me? Yes, it is. Okay. Then you end up having that scenario where, you know, you have to deliberate about it. You deliberate about what to do. Now, you better not deliberate very long with this problem, because if you do, you're going to end up needing $4,000 worth of hoses put in the car. And sometimes you don't need all $4,000 worth. Like, it's got to get bad for that. But the ones right at the engine, they get the hottest. There's about 6 or 8 hoses there. Those almost always need to be replaced with this. And those hoses never go bad. If you don't have this happen, they never fail.
You said the radiators could be damaged to the point.
I've seen a car need a heater core, both radiators, and every hose, because it sat broken for 2 years. It was 2 years now, okay? But it sat in the guy's garage broken for 2 years while he was trying to save money. If he would have called me first, I would say, flush all that crap out of the system while you're waiting, because otherwise you've got a grenade with a pin pulled sitting there waiting to go off for 2 years. But he did that for 2 years, and it cost him like an extra $6,000. Because all the hoses and the radiators and the heater core, and it's because he had to wait, you know, and I get it. If you have to wait, you have to wait, but you need to spend some money up front to make sure you don't have to spend a lot more down the road. But so you got the denial, you've got the deliberation, and deliberating means doing research, like watching this video and listening to a specialist that does this every day. And that also, during the deliberation period, you need to make sure your shop understands this failure. If they've never seen this before, you got the wrong shop. Very clear. You got to ask them, do you have the Stomsky Racing heat exchanger pressure testing tool? Do you have a vacuum lift system to put coolant in this car with once you get it finished? If they don't have both of those, and if they've never seen a cracked cylinder head, take the car the hell away from there. I'm telling you just need to. And then that third thing is the decisive moment. Denial, deliberation, decisive moment. Okay. Yeah. That's you got to decide about what you're going to do. And if you decide you have to wait, then that's one thing, but you got to make sure you flush everything and get the problem isolated, so you're not going to have more collateral damage. And if you decide you're going to go ahead and fix it yourself, that's great. You know, the M9X video series we did about how to build one of these engines, the knowledge group sells that, Ellen Engineering sells that. And you can use that to help you pull your cylinder heads off. And then, you know, if you decide that you don't want to fix the car and you want to sell it like it is, that's, you know, if you don't love it, that's probably one of the best things to do. But don't wait around, because you're going to screw the next guy. You know, if you wait around too long, he's going to end up spending $6,000 on hoses too. So,
and if I think that people need to know, it's not the end of the road for the engine. If you make a good plan quickly and follow the steps that you say of cleansing it of all the poison.
And again, the thing is, how many miles does the engine have on it? Okay. Because if it's got 80 or 100,000 miles on it, qualifying that engine for a repair is probably not going to be something that's going to be positive. You're probably going to find out that it has more stuff worn in it. You're probably going to find it has bore scoring or whatever. So you don't want to just haphazardly go in there and throw a head on it or haphazardly go in there and fix the head, right? There's a guy right now on Renlist, okay? And you saw this one. 10 years ago or something like that, he had a cracked cylinder head, okay? And he's always been so, you know, I told him I wouldn't fix that cylinder head. That's what I told him. I said, where that crack is, at the time he sent me the information about it, I said, we've not had any luck fixing that crack. We've not been working on that crack. I would not fix that crack for you. He found somebody else that would do it. And he bragged all about for years and years about how this other guy was able to do it, how the other guy did it. Now he has bore scoring, okay? And he said it was an unusual case of bore scoring when no, it's not. The case of bore scoring he's got is exactly like every case of bore scoring I get reported here. There's nothing unusual about it, okay? So, you know, his engine probably didn't have signs of bore scoring 10 years ago, but today yours might. So if you're going to do this repair, you've got to pre-qualify it. You know, pull the sump plate off, see what you've got there. You know, has the engine had an intermediate shaft bearing retrofit or an IMS solution done? No. You know, also your timing chain wear pads, the 5-chain engines that had these cylinder heads cracked the most, they're real bad about those wear pads failing. So, you know, why just pull one cylinder head off when you know the other side is going to end up having, you know, variable valve timing issues on the other side because of worn tensioner paddle pads and things like that.
So, yeah, there's a guy I was talking to just replace those pads on one side.
Yeah, and it's doing it on the other side.
Actually, the shop tried to get him to do it. He said, you know, I'm already here. I'll do both sides.
And I know the shop that did it. And we were talking about that in the background. And in this side of our world, the people that I work with, all my certified installers, we have our own chat groups. And we talk about the things that people do that are stupid decisions with these cars. And we're always sharing the same kinds of stories. You know, it's crazy. But, you know, if you're going to pull one cylinder head off, I would pull them both off. I would go ahead and do the other side. I would just freshen it up, do a valve job on it, whatever, make sure it doesn't have any cracks either. We've seen these engines with 2 cracked heads. Okay. I had one probably about 10 years ago. It was a 2000 Boxster S, horrible for cracking cylinder heads. It came in, had a cracked head. We pulled off the head on bank one and it had a big honking crack in it. I mean, it was very easy to see. But then I was going to do the wear pads and stuff on the other side while I had it apart. And I pulled the lifter carrier out, which is right above the area where the cylinder head cracks. And I saw one little dot of coolant. It was clean coolant. And I said, you know what, man? I think this freaking head's cracked too. Because of my attention to detail and the fact that I went to the other side, we pressure tested the other head and found 2 cracks in it. So that cylinder head had a crack, had 2 of them that would have come back to bite us in the ass. We would have put this whole thing back together and it would have had intermix all over again and we would have had a pissed off customer.
Let me ask you a question, Jake. How close would someone be cost-wise to do a rebuild when they have a serious case of intermix? If they love the car, this is a car they want to keep. How close are they where it would be beneficial for them just to go ahead and bite the bullet and pay to have the engine completely reconstructed with Nicosil cylinders, the whole 9 yards, the bearing addressed, everything updated, new sensors, whole 9 yards?
I lost you there for a second.
Oh, okay. What I was asking is how practical is it cost-wise? How close would someone need to be when you're dealing with intermix to go ahead and say, hey, you need to go ahead and rebuild this engine?
Well, I mean, pretty much today, they're going to be really close with me because you know, we haven't done a repair like this in probably about 3 years, just a repair, meaning that we just did the cylinder heads and that was it, because almost every other car we've seen, it failed a pre-qualification for said repair. You know, we learned that we had a problem with bore scoring. We learned that it had something else going on, stretch timing chains, or it had a bunch of plastic in the oil or whatever. So it's really not happening much anymore where you can just go do a repair.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
If you look at it close enough, you're probably going to find something you don't want to find, but you've got to find it before it finds you.
I mean, everything on the engine is aging. I mean, you think about a 20-year-old car now, you know, you got aging fuel injectors. You got cylinders that are probably going to have issues with scoring. You're going to have sensors going bad all over the darn thing. You have piping and vacuum lines, and it just adds up into the point where you just say, dang, you know, if I'm going to keep this car for another 10, 15 years, I might as well just get a good fresh, you know, reconstructed engine.
So this is the thing. I don't ever tell a customer that. It's got to be his idea, okay? I tell him what it's going to cost to fix it. So we give you an idea when I do those repairs. Let's say a guy comes to me with a 2996, like that Millennium Edition rare car, and it's got 30,000 miles on it, okay? Everything else is pristine, it passed pre-qualification, all that sort of thing. My price to do a repair on that one cylinder head, which is basically today going to replace that head. I'm not going to just go fix that head. We've seen heads fail after a repair, not at the repair site, but 6 inches away from it, because we found that those heads are weak, especially in a 2000. If it's a 2000, as of about 2 years ago, I stopped repairing those heads completely. I'm only going to replace that head, okay? But let's say he wants that done. I'm going to sell him a cylinder head. I'm going to throw his in the scrap yard. And actually, I'm going to throw it in a storage container I've got out back for one day when we have to repair them, because there's no more left, right? And good luck finding a lot of these, you know, these cylinder heads for a 3.4 that have this problem, because they're few and far between that aren't cracked. It would be about a $10,000 repair for me to do the things that engine needs. I'm not going to just slap another head on it and that's it. I'm going to pull the other cylinder head off. I'm going to make sure it's not cracked. We're going to rebuild it. We're going to put new valve springs in it. We're going to do a lot of work to it that we know needs to be done. We're going to go ahead and change those variable valve timing wear pads because we know they're failing. We're going to replace the other chain guides because we know they're failing. We're going to do the rear main seal. We're going to put an IMS solution in it. We're going to give it a clutch. It might get a flywheel. Okay. It's a $10,000 job. Basically, the guy could spend 20 grand and end up with a stage one engine of mine, like a stocker or a stage one, according to which way he goes and what year his car is, but about 20 grand would buy it for it. The difference is the amount of time. You know, when we take on a repair, a lot of times we can get it done in 6 or 8 weeks. If you're on the reconstruction list, you're gonna be there for a bare minimum of a year at this point in time. But, you know, of course, there's other people doing this work. I mean, I don't like to do repair work anymore. We basically have an engine factory here.
Not to scare people away from the Millennium Edition cars, because they are beautiful. I mean, that paint is amazing. It's kind of has like a purplish blue paint.
Yeah, the violet and just chroma
top,
flare,
top
yeah.
end interior. But a recent example of a guy wanted one. And it showed one of the Millennium cars showed up on Bring a Trailer. And he bid, I mean, it was top dollar for the car. I think it was like 20 grand, 22 grand. And it had high miles on it. Got the car back month, had intermix. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I read it. And I guarantee you what happened with that one. And I don't know this. The guy never contacted me. But speculation would tell me the guy that sold that car probably knew about it, and he put something in the system called bar stop leak, okay? And this stop leak will go to a crack, it'll go to a void, and it will block it. It also will block a lot of other things in the system, okay? And it will get you by, so you can do a max attack and sell the car on CarMax, to CarMax, if you know what I mean. Or basically rip somebody else off. I mean, that's what happens a lot of times. And again, I'm not saying this guy did that, but this is a scenario that can lead to that, where somebody does that. Now, typically, somebody's not going to sell a car like that on BAT because it's going to end up being a high-profile complaint with something like this.
Yeah, there's it's highly suspect.
I mean,
it's highly suspect. Yeah.
But the thing is, being a 2000 model year, I wouldn't trust it as far as I could throw it because of that. I mean, literally. I mean, you just can't. But if the car was like an 04 or something and it had that happen, yeah, I would think somebody probably patched it up and they probably did that. But more than likely, they didn't do that to that car. But anytime something happens shortly thereafter, you know, that's a problem. And there's an old wives' tale, an old mechanics trick where you break a raw egg. You heard of that one before?
No, I haven't. Tell me.
Put a raw egg in the radiator. And if you got a radiator leak,
oh, yes, I have heard of that. Yes, yes.
It works. It actually works. I did it to a tractor one time, and it worked.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I've heard that. I was like, what? Yeah, I heard that.
I've got an old Ford tractor I did that to. It works on old stuff because it's no close tolerances. But, you know, these modern cars, the tolerances are so close that you can't get by with stuff like that. The bar stop leak stuff just goofs everything up in the whole engine.
But this has been really good. This has been a great story. I mean, talking about
I got one story.
How these things are all connected.
Let me tell you about it. Well, because the neck bone's connected to the tailbone, right? I mean, it's all connected. It's all interlaced. So I'll tell you, I want to leave you guys with a story. So I had a customer probably circa 2009 or so. The fellow's name's Ron Scott from Florida. He was another former Marine, and we always treat each other a certain way. And he had this bright speed yellow 996 and he bought new. And he sends the car to me. It had Y2K syndrome. It was a 2000 and it had a cracked head. Well, it was cracked in the same place that guy on Renlist had the crack. Okay. And I told him, I don't want to fix this head. I've got another engine here. It had an IMS bearing failure, came out of a car that I bought, you know. I'll pull the heads off of it. I'll rebuild those heads and I'll put those on your engine. So I took his, and it had the crack in that one area by the exhaust valve guide that we didn't want to fix at the time. And I put them on the shelf in my storage container and it had his name on it, Ron Scott. Okay. I put this other set of virgin heads that were rebuilt on his car, got it all done, sent it home to him. He loved it. No problem at all. About 5 years goes by. I hadn't heard anything out of him at all. Just disappeared. And when we do good work, no news is good news. Guy disappears, that's it. We don't bother people. We don't follow up. We give you one follow-up and say, if you got questions, let us know. We don't bother people. We don't have time. And we know we don't want to be bothered either, so we know what it's like. But he calls me up. Jake, this is Ron Scott. I immediately knew who he was. I'm Semper Fi, sir. How are you? Blah, blah. We start talking Marine stuff. And the next thing he says, well, I'm calling you with bad news. And I said, okay. He said, I had a flashback. My engine has done the same thing that it did when I sent it to you several years ago. I said, okay. Well, I remembered that I did not do a crack repair on his cylinder heads. We replaced them. I said, pack the car up, send it to me. I had a truck coming up that we were doing like 4 or 5 IMS jobs out of South Florida. I had to pass right by him. Truck picked his car up, brought it to me. I get it here. Sure enough, I diagnose it, has a cracked head. I pull the engine out. One of those virgin heads I put on it cracked. Okay. So I did the guy a favor by doing what I thought was right at the time based on the information that I had about that repair. And I replaced the heads. That came back to bite me in the tail. So I called him up and I said, Ron, you're not going to believe this, but one of those heads I put on the engine cracked. I said, but what I'm going to do is now that it's been several more years, we have developed a fix for that crack that's in your other cylinder heads. And it's holding up pretty well. We haven't had any problems with it. Sent the car home. I charged him nothing. There was no warranty on it. I didn't charge him anything. And he's been gone ever since. No problems.
Wow.
Okay.
So basically, we kind of lost you for a second there, but what you were saying is you went into the storage, you pulled the original heads.
Still had his name on
them. Repair those, and you installed them on the car, and to date, you haven't heard from him on this car.
Exactly. And that's the thing. See, in that 5 or 6 years that passed by, we were able to develop a fix for that problem and fix it on his original heads and give them right back to him. And then, you know, I took the other ones and kind of set them aside. But we have had a situation where two or three of these cylinder heads over the years that we've repaired have formed a crack again, not at the weld site, not at the repair site, but somewhere else in that head. So because of that, I've stopped repairing them because it's almost like, hey, this head is flawed, you know, and it's weak and you can't see down inside of it. And I have people tell me all the time, well, Magnaflux the head. How the hell are you going to do that? It's not magnetic. You can only Magnaflux things that are ferromagnetic. You can't Magnaflux that cylinder head. You can do some non-destructive inspections with eddy current, which we've done before, but there's so much inside the head that's not the same between heads. You can't do it with any degree of accuracy. So a little bit of that's a bit of a hope and a prayer. But, you know, I think we've had two of those things fail over all these years of the ones that we repaired. And, I mean, back probably 2010, 2011, we probably repaired 40, I would say, 30 or 40 engines easily. With that protocol, and you know, none of them have had that problem again, except for these two. But it didn't take very much for me to say I'm not doing that anymore, because nothing good comes from trying to do people a favor a lot of times, you know.
That's awesome. I mean, that's. I didn't realize that this problem occurred so much. I knew that with the 2000 model. Primarily.
Well, it seems to pop. The reason I wanted to do this Rencast tonight is because it's been popping up left and right lately.
Really?
Especially on the Facebook groups where guys are talking about it, and it never fails. If somebody posts intermix picture, within the first 5 or 6 posts, somebody's going to come in and say, you got a blown head gasket. And I just want to bitch slap the guy. I just want to bitch slap. I'm all like, dude, you have no idea what you're talking about.
Can you demonstrate that slap for us?
Bitch slap.
Well, Jake, it's been great talking to you. I think we've been going for an hour now. I think we can wrap it up. I think we have enough information where people know what they and yeah. They don't have an excuse now. You know what you got to do if you ever see.
Well, so let me summarize this in 1 minute or less.
Okay.
Okay. If you have a car that has not had the water pump changed on that car during your ownership and you've owned that car for more than 3 years, change the freaking water pump. Do it tomorrow. Okay. Use a genuine OEM, genuine Porsche water pump. If you can't find that, use a Purebird. Do not use one that's some off the wall brand. Do not use one with a metal impeller. Okay. You're smart if you go ahead and change and put a low temp thermostat from LN Engineering in the engine at the same time. Do not use a ripoff or a knockoff of that. There's a knockoff of it out there that made by Walbro, and they don't work well. And we've seen people having problems with those. If you have intermix, get the freaking system cleaned out absolutely immediately. And do not trust a shop that is going to do this work for you if they do not have the proper tools to pressure test that heat exchanger and properly fill the coolant back into the engine. If they haven't seen this before, don't let them mess with it. There's no reason why, with the amount of these failures we've seen, a well-experienced shop should have seen this before and they should have been able to attack this problem before, okay? And if you end up having a cracked cylinder head, Lynn Hoffman at Hoffman Automotive Machine in Athens, Georgia, is the best source out there for fixing these M96, M97 cylinder heads from a cracked perspective. So call and talk to him about it. If you want us to reconstruct the engine because you've had an intermix condition, that's a perfect instance to take advantage of our program. You can basically take the failure and turn it into an opportunity to make the engine something it never was from the factory. And that is a hand-built beast that produces more power, more reliability, more longevity, and will not have problems in the future.